The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Elisa Carcar and I'm so excited to be hosting the show for the very first time. And yes, it's my very first ever radio show too, so it's all very exciting and special. I'm a mum of two myself and I can't wait to bring you honest conversations to support you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. I'm so pleased to be joined by today's guest, a mum career empowerment coach no less. Please give a big welcome to Vicky Lamley from Mum & More. Vicky, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is really exciting. So this is my first ever radio recording as well. So yeah, very, very exciting. Thank you for having me.
We can learn together. We can learn together. Now, Vicky, we met a few months ago and you support mums around returning to work and building their confidence during that transition. There's so much stress tied up in this stage and I've learned a lot from the advice you've shared and I can't wait for you to share some of that with our listeners today. To start us off, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, a bit about you, your personal life and the journey that led you into this work?
Yes, of course. So yeah, you introduced me firstly as Vicky Lamley, which is very exciting. So I recently got married. So getting associated with that name has taken me a bit of time. But yes, I am a wife. I am recently married, as I say, but I am a mum to a 3-year-old little girl. We call her the Threenager as she's a whirlwind. And obviously you have met her too, Elisa, so you know she's full of energy. I also have two bonus boys. I'm often asked, what does that mean? So I have two stepsons. One is 10 and one is 12. So blended family life is very, very busy this end. I am a mum empowerment career coach, as you say. So I run my business, Mum & More, and I still work within the corporate role as a head of learning and development, which is a role I really, really love, hence why I still do it. But it gives me an opportunity to do what I love with coaching, learning and development initiatives and all of those things every day. So yeah, basically, that's me in terms of my personal life.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And how was your own return to work after having Poppy? Do you feel motherhood changed you as a person? And how did that influence how you felt about work and how you navigated those early days, weeks and months when you returned to work?
Yeah, so this is pretty interesting, actually. So my own return back to work is one of the reasons why Mum & More exists, actually. But if I take you back a little bit in terms of what happened and why that happened, I guess. So I was in a position where I had just negotiated a flexible working request. It was a bit bumpy, if I'm being open, first off. But when I had negotiated it, I was going back into a business that I knew. I had been there for a very long time. And I just negotiated this fantastic learning and development lead role, working the 3 days a week. And it was amazing, actually. And it was coming from a place of just getting everything that I wanted to be in place and going back into the organization, feeling really strong and happy and confident. And motherhood had changed me. I was talking to one of the mums today, actually, at a workshop, and I was really confident. And, you know, motherhood made me more confident as an individual. And this is where all of this excitement and all of this was coming from. But what actually happened that day when I went back, I remember we have a really long corridor that you have to walk up to get into our main office. And I remember when I walked up that corridor, my legs just turned to jelly. And it was so strange because, as I said, I was coming from this place of confidence, negotiating what I wanted, this fantastic opportunity, a place where everybody knew me. And it just hit me. All of those things. Mum guilt. Had I got the right childcare arrangements? Was I wearing the right outfit? Oh my goodness, there's so many people here that look so new. And it literally just hit me like a 10-ton truck. And my knees went to jelly. And I was just like, oh gosh. But I picked myself up. I managed to kind of reconnect with who I was, what I was all about. And I really leaned on strengths and things that I could draw on from my time on maternity leave and what it had given me and what made me really strong. And in essence, I never wanted any other person to feel that way. And it just hit me that this is what I need to do. I need to support mums. And that, as I said, that's one of the reasons why Mum & More was created. It's a sister brand to a career and leadership consultancy that I set up on my maternity leave. But that moment, that jelly leg moment that I describe, it really hit me. And I was like, no, I need to do something specifically for mums.
I think it's so unique what you offer. And I, you know, definitely remember when I went back off maternity leave, having those just real kind of imposter syndrome, actually thinking, hang on, how did I even get that job? Do I really know how to manage people? And do I know how to do my job? And you really sort of question yourself. It's a big issue, isn't it?
It really is. And so many mums that I meet at different places and so many mums that I work with, exactly that, they question themselves, can I do it? And as you say, that imposter syndrome kicks in and it just makes you question all things. And I have a little trick for this, actually. So, you know, a lot of people, when they're on maternity leave, you almost disconnect that with your career. And I think, you know, we see a lot on CVs, career break, maternity leave period, and you almost disconnect it from what it is with your career. And what I do is when I speak and I'm working with mums, I say, well, hang on a minute, it is a full-time job and some. And what are those skills? What are those strengths? What are those attributes that you have during maternity leave? But this episode, you know, because you're going to be a full-time mum forever, you know, and we connect with actually, it's not a career break. It's an extension to your career and you're learning new skills, new strengths, new attributes that all come back into the world of work that actually make you stronger. So when I say that, you know, I felt more confident than ever and actually becoming a mum gave me that strength, it's exactly that. I learned so many skills that were so transferable and so vital that we can bring back into the workplace. And if you think about it, they are real CEO skills and some, right? Your role as a mum is you're keeping that little person alive. You know, those early doors on maternity leave is a huge job. And you're making decisions when you're sleep deprived, probably hungry, exhausted, all of those things. And you are making instant decisions in the moment with impossible conditions with a really extreme role. And you've got no instructions, right? And when you put that into perspective, when you're going back into the workplace, it's completely different, you know, and actually it's not as hard as what it feels from what you've just been doing as that part of your career. So it's about really recognizing that it's not a break. It is an extension. You know, it's more skills. It's more things that you're learning that you bring back into the workplace.
I absolutely love the way you reframe that situation, like the CEO of your household. I think that is so powerful and actually so empowering for a mum to, you know, just change their perspective and look at it that way. And I have had a few mums say, I think it'll be easier going back to work.
Yeah, I mean, it can be for sure. And I also say to the mums, you know, what's one thing, even however small it is, if you're in that moment where you think, I just don't want to go back or I don't want to do it, a lot of mums say to me, I'm dreading it. You know, what's something that's really small you can look forward to? And let's be honest, you know, that could be having a hot drink. It could be going to the toilet on your own. I mean, that doesn't yes. really happen a lot as a mum. And actually being able to do that when you go back to work, it sounds silly, but it is something that you can kind of connect with and think, okay, this is something small, but it has a big impact. I was delivering a workshop this morning and many of the mums have to commute to work. And it's funny, when all of us have this commute, we always used to moan about it. Oh, I've got to get on the train. Oh, I need to do this. For me personally, my commute was actually catching an aeroplane and it was quite, you know, oh. But when you go back to work, that commute time gives you a bit of breathing space. And it feels a little bit different. And we kind of deep dived on that on a workshop today. And it's quite interesting to think about things that you didn't like before that actually going back to work now, you do. You can really think, yeah, that's going to be pretty good, actually.
Yeah, definitely. You know, kind of putting those sorts of clothes on and feeling a bit smarter, having that extra time and the hot drink and the uninterrupted toilet break are pretty high up there. So yeah, definitely. I love that trick too. And it must help immensely that you not only have the experience as a experienced HR professional yourself, so you see it from both sides. You're the mum who's had this experience returning to work and manage the ongoing struggle, and you're doing it today, and also you have got all that sort of depth of HR knowledge, so you really know it from the company's perspective. Like, how does that help you in terms of supporting mums?
Yeah, I mean, it is a unique blend that I bring to the table. And I suppose when I was talking about my corporate role, I didn't really share a little bit of the background there. So I actually come with 22 years HR leadership experience across many different corporate sectors. So what is really unique about that is having all of that HR experience and now the L&D experience, I can look at things from both sides of the perspective. So I understand things from that HR perspective. I understand things from the organizational perspective, but I also very much get it as the employee and a mum who is an employee and balancing all of those things. So it is an interesting dynamic. And so many of my clients that I work with, you know, when I've helped them prepare for different conversations or if I'm helping them prepare for reviews or different things, so many of them say to me, oh my goodness, Vicky, it was like you were in the room. Now, just to put a huge caveat here, I can't, you know, tell the future, don't have a crystal ball as such, but I do have an understanding of what and how things are going to be positioned. I mean, I have been an HR manager. I've reviewed the flexible working requests. I know what it means to say yes, and I know how difficult it can be to say no. And actually looking at it from the business perspective as well. And I think when we put that into perspective, it helps the clients that I work with really kind of set out their scene and what they want to say for these discussions, looking at it from a multifaceted angle. And I think, you know, ultimately, employers want to do right by employees. They want them happy. They want them motivated. And it's a conversation. And I think it's more about viewing things as a conversation rather than conflict. But this unique blend of experience that I have really, you know, walking the walk that my mum's walk, and having that, you know, 22 years, it's a lot, right? But 22 years of HR experience, it really helps.
Yeah, I think that's absolute gold. You know, the sort of the nuts and the bolts. And I think that's great reassurance for people working with you. And you mentioned there's kind of similar themes that come up. Can you tell us about any of the key common themes or concerns that you're hearing sort of repeatedly at the moment when you are talking to mums?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many things, and I probably could take up the entire radio show forever, but when I think about kind of specific things that have come up and fresh off the press from this morning's workshop, identity shifts, you know, your identity having changed since becoming a mum is something that people talk about a lot. And also the need for, you know, searching for who I was before. And I think, you know, people within the corporate world, your work role, it really kind of creates an identity. So many mums I speak with say, you know, work was a huge part of me, is a huge part of me, but now I don't know what it is because things have changed, right? So there is a lot of discussion around identity shift, and some people kind of spend lots of time searching for who they are or were, sorry, should I say, and then they're confused by who they are now. And as I say, what I mentioned a while ago about reconnecting with what that maternity leave and now you are a mum, all of those strengths and what makes you fantastic really helps when you're thinking about navigating the identity piece. Priorities having shifted, my focus being different. So many of my mums, you know, say they were real career women at work, and now when they're returning back, they're worried about people's perception. They were always that person first in the office, last out, and now that can't happen. And they're worried about the perception piece there and the need for flexibility. And that really links on to a very hot topic around boundaries. So setting those boundaries, but feeling comfortable with setting boundaries as a busy working mum. And I talk a lot with my mums about, you know, we have so much pressure. We need to set boundaries. And we do, but there's something that's really key about boundaries that makes it successful. And that is when you make it non-negotiable. And when something is non-negotiable, it's exactly that. And really, that can be as simple as one non-negotiable boundary that helps you as a busy working mum. So for me, my non-negotiable is I don't work one day a week, midweek, and I have that time with my little girl. But I have that one non-negotiable, but that's the thing with boundaries. One other thing I think that was really, really key is about communication. Now, we think a lot that we communicate really well, and maybe when we're having conversations with partners at home or employers or colleagues when we're in the workplace, how many times do we think we've said something and it's been super clear? And if we're honest, it gets lost in translation. So clear communication is really, really important. Saying what you mean, working out in advance of having that communication, what is it that you need? What is it that you want to say? Don't overcomplicate it and actually land a message that says what you mean and in a way that the other person can understand. So top level, that is some of the themes. And then we have spoken about with some of my mum clients and this morning actually around resilience, how important that is, how you can associate that and bring that back in to the workplace, what you've learned. And there were some mums I've spoken to recently about the need to be in control of everything. They were that career person, they were a senior person, they are a senior person within the workplace, but there's a need to be in control of everything. And I see this a lot, and I have been guilty of this in the past as well, that need to be involved in every detail. And when you've been out of the organization for a while, you can feel that you're completely out of touch. And this you can kind of handle by being very strategic when you do return and building those relationships with key stakeholders that can keep you in the loop, asking the right questions and using people that, yes, they do know more than you and they have got more details than you. And that's okay. But you can utilize them in a way to build rapport and relationship and also help you when you go back in the workplace. So I think that these are kind of some key themes and kind of peppering in maybe some tips if you're thinking about those key things that I just shared.
Yeah, such valuable information. I'm sure that'll be really useful for the listeners to hear about. And I just wonder, like, have any of these themes, have you seen, you've been working in this field, both in HR and then with your business for quite a while now. Have those themes like changed over time as you've been doing this work? Like, what one of the things that I hear a lot is around the flexible working space and people being worried about requesting flexible working or flexible working being rejected. And another thing that comes up quite frequently is people being made redundant on maternity leave, which is very hard to deal with. And I wondered, like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this and your experience, but also whether you feel things are improving in the workplaces generally. Are they staying the same or are we moving backwards? We hear a lot about this in the media, so it'd be really great to hear your perspective on it.
Yeah, and I think, gosh, that there's so many things that, you know, you can touch on with that topic. If I kind of break it down into maybe, you know, flexibility, requesting flexible working, that side of things, and then maybe talk a little bit about when restructures or changes happen at work rather than just kind of the redundancy scenario. But if I start with the flexibility piece, and I put a huge caveat here, I'm not an employment lawyer and it's not about getting into the legalities on anything. But in terms of flexible working, we know that legislations have changed. We know that workplaces have different provisions in place, employer to employer. But I think I believe that employers generally want to do the right thing. And I am seeing that there is a shift that recognizing that mums coming back into the workforce have so many transferable skills. And actually, this is a real top talent to support and invest in because these skills are so amazing. You know, if you think about what I said about those CEO skills, they're really, really important. But there is a challenge when I'm speaking to mums, you know, they are nervous to request flexible working around that perception piece, around is it viable, the fear of it being rejected, all of those things come into play. And in my experience, I think it is around the communication piece, actually thinking about what do you need and sharing that with your employer in the right way without putting all those barriers up in advance. And typically, if you share with an employer a solution that is going to work all round and it's not going to be harmful to the business, you know, ultimately, they will say no for flexible working requests. If it doesn't work for the business, there's typically a reason for it. It's not saying no for no sake in most cases. So it's about us looking at what are those options and presenting that to the employer so it feels okay all round. And that's why I say kind of these are communications, conversations rather than conflict. And I think sometimes when we think, oh, we've never had flexible working before, oh, nobody's had that before, we put up these barriers before we've even entered into that discussion. And I think, you know, it's about just owning those conversations and feeling empowered as a mum to do that without kind of putting those barriers up. But I think, you know, there's so many shifts within workplaces. And as I said, I believe, you know, employers want to do the right thing. It's just about how it works all round, if that makes sense. And I think there are shifts, but it is tricky. I mean, there's lots of things in the press about, you know, being a working mom and making it work with childcare. You know, what we get as a provision as childcare, making the hours work. Most people work, you know, either 9 till 5 or 8:30 till 5, whatever those working hours, but it's longer than what a childcare provision is sometimes. So there's all challenges all round. But I think it's about having those open conversations. And I believe that most employers want to be as flexible as they possibly can be. But it's on us. A lot of the work I do with mums is to drive those conversations in a positive way without it feeling really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think that's so good to hear, you know, that you see things are improving. That's really, you know, that's really positive. I think it's just that, yeah, it's a lot, isn't it, to feel like the pressure that you have to be in the driving seat of this conversation rather than waiting for it all to be done to you and you just take what you get and they're in the driving seat. Actually, it's like we've got to actually get this together. And if you want to thrive, not survive, on your return to work, then you do have to be in the driving seat, right? This is what you're saying.
I think so, yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, from an employer's perspective, sometimes it's a bit intimidating that end as well. You know, you want to say the right thing to a mum returning back to work. You want to make sure that everything is in place, but there are some things that you have to look at from the business perspective. And for me, when I was in that role, it was really refreshing when a mum came to me and said, this is what I need. This is how I would like it to look. And actually took things from that perspective, because then you could look at it, you know. And I always encouraged my mums, you know, to share with me, look, if we could do anything, how does it look? To really be as inclusive as possible. And I'm not saying that's HR's role in every organization. It's just my experience then. But I say, be in the driving seat if you want to feel empowered and get your message across, because then you're not waiting for something, I think, to be done to you, to kind of use that language. You're actually kind of opening up a discussion and making it a partnership rather than being told this is how it has to be. Now, of course, there's flexible working policies in people's handbooks and contracts. And I would always encourage everybody to look at that, follow the process, but enter into these discussions with an open mindset and really prepare for them. The other thing as well is when we talked about, I think you said the redundancy word, and I said, you know, more to look at it from restructures. A lot of mums that I speak to say there's been a lot of restructure or change, or there's something, or I've had to have a new role found for me because I potentially am at risk of redundancy. And there are some legislation provisions about what you can and can't do as an employer around that redundancy word. And as I said, huge caveat there, not from a legal perspective, but I think it's about recognizing, again, with an open mind, what does this really mean for me? How can this work? And a lot of mums that come to me, they've just been landed the news that there's been a fundamental shift to their role, or they're going to be in a new team, or they could be at risk or something. And I think all of this language and all of these terms can really frighten people. And I get it. But again, it's about taking a step back and actually saying, well, what does this really mean? Let's talk about this. Let's calm this situation down to understand what are the facts and how does that look? But yes, I am hearing more about restructures and different things happening whilst people are on maternity leave. That is, from my experience, more of a trend with the mums that I'm working with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Vicky, this has been so amazing, such valuable information. Thank you so much for talking to us. Obviously, other services are available, but if someone listening is interested in working with you, could you tell us a bit about how people can work with you and how they would get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So most of my services are on a one-to-one basis, but there are some group things in the pipeline at the moment. But you can find out all about my services and what I offer on my Instagram profile. So that is at mumandmoreV. And you can also find out things on my website, www.mumandmore.co.uk. You can't miss me, as my brand colours are pink and black. Pink is my favourite colour. So if you find me on Instagram when you're looking up Mum & More, or you see my website, the pink will stand out. So you will know that you are definitely in the right place.
Amazing. Go and give you a follow. Thank you so much, Vicky, for talking to us today. I really think the work you do is so, so important. I've learned even more than I had done from all of our chats before, and I'm sure our listeners will take away some really valuable information today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's lovely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You've been listening to Elisa Carcar and Vicky Lamley from Mama More on The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. I'll be back very soon with another honest conversation to support you as we navigate this wild parenting journey together. Until then, take care.
The Parent Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hi, and welcome to The Parent Show at Mix 92.6. Grab yourself a cuppa. I am Becky Bowen, and tonight we're going to be talking to Laura Cowan of Papaya. Papaya is something that shares deeply in my heart with my children at the moment, talking about screens and screen free time and how the impact of it on children. So Papaya stands for Parents Against Phone Addiction in Young Adults, and it was founded by Dr. Susie Davis in 2018. So Laura, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Becky. Thanks for having me.
So I know you're very passionate about Papaya. So would you like to explain a little bit about what it is?
Yeah, so I've been running the Key Stage 2 workshops for Papaya since July 2025. And they're a wonderful organisation set up by Dr. Susie Davies, who is a GP. And she was working for a surgery in Bristol and getting lots of young people from Bristol University come to her with mental health problems. And this was more than she'd ever experienced throughout her whole career as a GP before, just more and more young people with mental health problems. And she really wondered why this was. And so she did lots of research, spoke to lots of parents, lots of young people, and found that the impact of screens, the use of technology as it has grown over the years, is actually impacting young people's mental health, their resilience with different things. And so she set up the charity of Papaya to start educating about the different impact that it was having on mental health. And it's just grown and grown from there, really. And Papaya now offer Key Stage 2 workshops in schools, and it's currently funded for state schools. So I don't know how long that will be the case that it's funded for, but it is at the moment. So if there's any St. Albans schools that would be willing to have these workshops, then, you know, please do get in touch with Papaya.
Well, it's all over Hertfordshire that we cover, isn't it? So it's not just St. Albans in general.
Oh, brilliant.
And I know St. Albans are really hot on the mobile phones. I know that there's a smartphone ban, isn't there, in particular, I think, with a lot of St. Albans schools. So it's something that I think a lot of parents are really torn, aren't they? I know I am. I know I can see the benefits of kind of our kids having phones and being able to keep an eye on them and keep in touch with them, but also the negatives. I know personally for me, trying to get my kids off their screens is nigh on impossible. There's always and we talk about taking phones away, but then they want to be able to talk to their friends and be with their friends. It's really hard. So I don't know how, I know you've got kids yourself, so it's really difficult to find that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not about, you know, saying, you know, all screens are bad and we must never use them or anything like that. It's about kind of having that discussion and it being very non-judgmental. You know, some of the children that we speak to already have smartphones already. Some of the children we speak to have pads or are into gaming. And it's not about sort of shaming them in any way or saying, you know, we all love our technology and everything, but it's just about discussing screen time and the effects of it, and also how we can reduce that and bring in just other things that are really good for us that perhaps we're not doing as much anymore because we're on a screen so much.
Yeah.
So it's about the balance of it, really. And as a parent myself, I'm seeing it firsthand from my children. My eldest in particular, when she got to sort of year six and was about to go to secondary school, I was thinking, I don't really want her to have a phone. What's going on? But literally most of the parents had already given the smartphones to her friends at that point. And so I was doing lots of research anyway. And at that point, smartphone-free childhood hadn't sort of come out. So I was really thrilled when I heard about smartphone-free childhood and enthusiastically joined. And that's where I heard about Papaya and wanted to join the the movement as well.
So tell us a little bit more about Papaya. What do they do?
Yeah, so you're right. It stands for Parents Against Phone Addiction in Young Adolescents. And they offer a number of things. So yes, the Key Stage 2 workshops, also parent talks. So schools can book for presenters to go into the school and present a number of sort of slides and ideas, a lot of it quite sort of hard hitting really on the effects of screens. But sort of half of it is that, then half of it is the solutions to that, you know, parental controls, different ways that we can reduce screen time, including gaming as well. So, and then of course the parents get time to ask some questions, also discuss together as well, because oftentimes parents need that time to discuss things like, you know, when their children are on gaming together on sites and stuff, and how many children are using WhatsApp and different social media sites. So it's really, really helpful to have that discussion, and also for it to happen, you know, sort of at the school itself, so that the school is involved in it, because often now the schools are thinking about bringing in smartphone bans, or at least having that link up with parents on this issue as well. So it really helps for all of that. So there's the parent talks, there's the Key Stage 2 workshops, and then there's also some Key Stage 3 workshops for secondary schools, which is called The Healthy Selfie. And that is also based on a book that Dr. Susie Davis has written as well. And then there's a new workshop coming out soon aimed at parents for Key Stage 1 children and early years. And that's called The Power of Play. So it's about, you know, sort of looking at the impact of screens on the very young as well.
So if you could give our listeners, our parents, some sort of empowering information or tips that you could give them so that they could feel not disempowered by the fact that, you know, this is part of our life. And I think for me, what part of that is really up against is my older children have had life without screens, but my youngest child really doesn't know life without phone. I mean, we grew up without phones. We were out, we were playing, we didn't need a phone to tell us what time it was or for our parents to stay in contact with us. And so I think it's difficult. It's a different world, isn't it, for a start? But also, how can we move forward without being attached to our screens? I know also us as parents are quite often scrolling and doing the doom scroll. What model are we setting for our kids if we're doing that? Does that have an impact? What's your thoughts on that?
So my thoughts on that are that as a parent ourselves, I think it's really important to try a model and just reflect on how we're using our screens and our devices. And I, for one, have to do this often. And I talk about this in schools a lot, but it's just about kind of self-reflecting on our own screen time and what we'd like to do, and actually put in place different measures to reduce that. Ask your friends for help with that. Ask the other members of your household as well to help you. If you all work together as a household, it really helps too. Like, have a night a week where you don't use any screens, and that you might play some games, or have a half an hour at the weekend where you all sit down and read a book in silence or something. So there's little fun things that you can do. But also, I'd like to say, because I know that parents can feel, and this is just actually me personally as a parent, as opposed to perhaps a Papaya thing, but just to feel empowered as well as a parent to put in boundaries, because I think our children, you know, do need them. And I often speak to children at school who just have so much to say about screen time. I'm always so kind of pleasantly surprised. It's never a sort of, you don't come across many children who are very against what I'm saying. They all know instinctively that they'd really like to reduce their screen time. And so I take that as a real positive. So as a parent, it's about just having those boundaries and just feeling okay about it. So if you are going to give your child a smartphone, then just, you know, sign up a little, you know, agreement with them that it is still your phone, that you do get to access it whenever you need to. And just have those things in place, the parental controls, the screen time, the downtime, etc., because it does really help them, and it really helps you to have that kind of interaction as well.
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask actually, is how can parents start conversations with the children over their phones and social media without conflict and power struggles? I know, you know, most teenagers are very well adept in eye rolls and ignoring you and saying one more minute, or, you know, all of the things that we as parents kind of end up getting really short tempered about, because as much as we want them to be with their friends and having fun, there becomes a time where that's all it becomes about. And it's rather than being in real life, it's on screen. So how can we start those conversations without any conflict?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So when I'm in the workshops, we talk a lot about sort of the how they're designed, how the screens are designed. And I think a lot of the time it can feel like it's parent against child. But actually, when you look at how the screens are making us addicted, because it's the persuasive design of the technology that we're using. So it's almost as if we have to, and this is why the workshops are so great, because it sort of just educates the kids on, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. They are actually designed to be addictive. So it's no wonder all of us are, you know, are feeling quite addictive and drawn to them. But if we look at actually why they are designed that way, is because our attention is valuable. So what can we do to kind of make sure that the attention that we're using is valuable to ourselves and our own life? So, you know, not all things that are on screens are bad. Everything's, you know, there are lots of things that are, you know, sort of not very nice. And we talk about that. But also, you know, not everything is made the same, but it's also about just how are we spending our time and is it valuable to us? And no one cares about, you know, our time and the way we live our lives more than our families and our teachers and the people that care about us and our friends. So it's about sort of saying that actually we're in this together, you know, all of us, and that we're all trying really hard to have a healthy relationship with technology. And how can we do that? We need to put in boundaries. We need to make sure that we're using the time in a productive way, even on technology, and we can all do this together. So it's almost as if to say, I need your help too, to help my relationship with technology, and I need to help you with that too, because your brain's still growing and you still need to have that childhood that we got, yeah, you know, without
that's
screens.
That's key, isn't it? And yeah. I think that's the important thing, is we're all navigating it so newly together, aren't we, really? But we've had experience without it, whereas our children haven't. And I suppose it's just finding that balance and how we can get to that balance on it. So one last question that I can ask you then is, and this might not be an easy one, but if there's any one thing that you'd really like parents listening tonight to take away, what would that be?
I think there often it comes, this sort of chat comes a lot with guilt. Because often I'm sure we all feel like maybe we spend a bit too long on our phones or our screens, and maybe we've let our children do that. So I would like to say that when we know better, we can do better. And I think there's a lot in the news at the moment about different things, and we're all learning and we're all growing. So let's not feel ashamed about it. Let's talk. Let's keep the, you know, communication open, both with our children and each other. And it's not about judging each other, because we all, you know, sort of use it in different ways, but it is about maybe having the conversation a bit more. And just learning about the kind of impact of it and how we can have a healthier relationship with technology. So it's just about keeping the communication lines open.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just about that human connection as well, isn't
yeah,
it? You know, we
absolutely.
Can feel quite lonely, even though we've got this phone with all of these people that are talking to us, we still feel quite isolated and quite alone. So yeah, I totally hear that. So if people wanted to learn a bit more about the work that you do, where can they find you?
Yeah, so it's at www.papayatalks.com, and it has all the information about the workshops and the talks around the country on there.
Oh, amazing. Thank you, Laura. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I've personally been to one of your talks, so I know how amazing they are and how fantastic they are. So just thank you so, so much. Wish you well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Becky Bowen was speaking to Laura Cowan from Papaya there. Now, Environment Matters is our sister programme here on Mix 92.6, looking at all aspects of sustainability and our environment. Mandy Yorworth found a very interesting project run by some volunteers called the East Hearts Uniform Exchange. She met up with Leighton Bishop to talk about the project and how it works.
Again and again, we see how helping people and the environment so often go hand in hand. Think about walking and cycling rather than driving. It reduces our greenhouse gas emissions, but also helps our physical and mental health. Or perhaps think about planting trees. They soak up pollutants, which damage the climate, but also our lungs. And also perhaps things like replacing some meat that we eat with beans and pulses reduces the amount of land that's needed to produce our food. It's also great for our health. Win-win. And here's another one. Rather than throwing out pre-used uniforms, instead donating them to help those struggling to afford school uniforms. Step in the East Hearts Uniform Exchange. A bunch of former pupils take donations of unwanted school uniforms and use them to provide free uniforms to those in need. So let's hear from Leighton Bishop to find out where it all started.
So originally it was started off as a school project. When it was work experience day in secondary school, we all came to school. And if you didn't have a work placement, you'd have a school workshop hosted by external professionals. And the idea was that everyone would go into groups and create an idea for a charity or a non-profit. And the idea was that this charity idea that you're creating, it could be started from tomorrow or the end of the week, or, you know, the week after that. So it was a quick starting idea. And ultimately, we create the idea of free school uniforms, which was obviously, we were still in school at the time, so we could see the effects it had on people. And we came second in the contest, but we still got the same chances as the winners. And then from there, we won the funding for the idea and took it on from there.
Fantastic. Well, I mean, that sounds like a brilliant workshop that somebody was running there, and brilliant that such a good idea came from it. So why did you think at the time that uniforms were so important, and what did lack of uniforms, what effect do you think that it was having on your fellow pupils?
So when we created the idea, which was in the start of 2022, it was at the height of the cost of living crisis. And we as students knew how many times we'd go through set of uniform, PE socks, how many times we got go through blazer nearly every year. And we knew the costs. And all it took was that, you know, you look around schools and you could see that some of the students weren't as privileged to be able to afford the school uniform. And we knew other parents, obviously, parents of friends that weren't so privileged to be able to afford them. And we could actually see, you know, the effects it has, not only on the parents who necessarily can't afford them, but also the students that it has in terms of the fact that students who get in detentions for not having the correct uniform, 10-minute break detentions, missing their break, missing their lunch because of ultimately things that are out of their control.
Well, and you've described on your social media that having a uniform is your access to education, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. So ultimately, if a student is constantly getting detentions, constantly getting told off for not having the right uniform, their attitude to learning is obviously going to go down further along as they're getting told off. Because if you go to school and you're spending most of your time getting told off for not having the correct uniform, you're quickly going to learn that that student's not going to enjoy school that much and will start to affect their learning.
Yeah, indeed. Well, that is very sad to hear. And do you think that it's a common problem? Is it still a common problem?
Yeah, it's definitely a common problem. Obviously, when we first started 2022, cost of living crisis were all-time high, but the effects are still, you know, the issues and the problems are still here. East Hertfordshire, typically people look at it as a quite affluent area. However, if you look beyond that, there is definitely people that need helping throughout. And it's definitely a big issue. We still see record numbers of people asking for our help. And it's definitely an issue that shouldn't be ignored. It shouldn't be brushed under the carpet because it's still very much a big problem.
Yeah, indeed. As you say, plenty of Hertfordshire can seem very well off, but there are certainly pockets of deprivation in virtually all societies. So can you tell us from that workshop that you held at school to where you are now to the East Hearts Uniform Exchange, how does the whole thing work? What happens?
So ultimately, it's a fairly simple process, realistically, in terms of getting a uniform. If someone contacts us through social media, so we're on Facebook, Instagram, we've got email, or even in an event, we're holding a pop-up shop, someone come up to us and can we have a uniform, but ultimately, I can't take it home today. either, depending on your preference, we'll send you an email or you can contact us and ask what you need. And then we'll go into our storage and we'll see if we have it. And then we'll send you an email when's ever the best time to drop it off, because we can either do collection or we can obviously drop it off to you. Obviously, we've just got to be aware that items we do have does vary depending on donations, because we are solely a donation run organization. So sometimes the items that are there are not always there. But as soon as we get the items back in stock, we always send an email to the person saying that we've got this. Do you still need it?
Okay. So you rely on people needing your services to get in touch with you?
Yeah. So obviously, we also advertise on community pages and on social media saying, if you're in need of school uniform, please get in touch. We also have posters and flyers out around the area.
And how about as far as receiving donations of uniform? How does that work?
In terms of receiving donations, it's fairly a similar process where we ask online and both in person through when we hold events or on the flyers, saying that we're in need of this and this uniform. And if people have it available, they can contact us through the methods previously said, and we can either pick it up from you or you can drop it off. It's all about over preference. We try to make it as easy to donate as possible for the person donating uniform.
And do you try to keep a good stock of uniform in supply? Do you have a big storage space for this?
Yes, so we have a fairly large storage space where we try to keep, obviously, as much uniform as possible without making it difficult for other people to get school uniform. So we have a fairly large supply of uniform.
Yeah.
Season dependent as well.
Okay. So you said that you think there's a big demand for your services. Are you able to meet that demand, do you think?
We're definitely able to meet majority of the demand. However, when the season starts, so August is usually our biggest month in terms of demand. And sometimes the uniform demand is sometimes too great for even our ability.
So definitely worth keeping in mind if we have spare school uniforms, as you say, particularly when children just about to go back to school. So what we've just spoken about so far is mainly school uniforms, but of course kids don't just need uniform for that, do they? We've talked about uniforms being, you know, what's needed to actually get into education. There's lots of different things. These like football clubs and going to guides and scouts. Are you able to help with things like that?
Yeah, we're definitely able to help things like that, in terms of especially with football clubs and sport athletic clubs and like that. Our main focus is school uniforms. However, when people are in need, if people do come to us with clubs such as football or brownies or scouts, we do try our best to find a uniform for them.
So could you tell us the geographical area that you cover at the moment?
At the moment, it's particularly east of Hertfordshire in terms of Bishop Stortford, Sawbridgeworth, Much Haddon, that area of Hertfordshire. However, in the future, as our work progresses, we are looking to expand westwards in Hertfordshire and hopefully be able to cover a larger area.
Well, that is really good to hear. So if we live in those areas and we've got things like school uniform, we can obviously donate unwanted school uniform to you, but do you also need financial donations as well?
Yes. So unfortunately, as much as we try to make it, nothing in the world is free. So we do have running costs, which means that donations are vitally needed. So things like storage costs, transport, information. So when we try to give out information booklets, we all need to find a way of funding it. So donations, any amount is hugely appreciated. If it wasn't for the very grateful people, we wouldn't be able to carry on the work we do.
And obviously there's huge benefits in what you do for the people you're able to provide uniform for. Are you also conscious of the fact that you're doing a good thing for the environment as well, helping to keep unwanted uniforms out of landfill?
Yeah, so obviously we're very conscious about the materials we use. So most of the stuff, where possible, we use recycled items and goods, because ultimately, in a world of fast fashion, fast moving trends, a lot of clothes do go to landfill, and a lot of items do go to the dump, where they can actually be recycled, actually be given a whole new life, and ultimately continuing the lifespan of the item.
Indeed. And in doing so, as you say, help children who otherwise might have a much more negative experience of education. Well, it's great to hear about the good work that you're doing, Leighton, and we look forward to hearing about further expansions in the future. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to speak.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raydon Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raydonsolicitors.co.uk.